difficulty is you're dealing with a regime which is not even an enigma. I mean, you can't put any shape on the regime. You don't know whether there's a power play going on between the old guard and the dearest son of the dear leader. And the possibility always is that there will be some miscalculation. I go along with the conventional wisdom that North Korea is Machiavellian, that it uses threats and the rattling of missiles, or in this case the actual use of artillery, to get its own ends.
It goes back to 1953 in many ways, and the Korean War then was halted by a ceasefire agreement with no permanent resolution or emphatic victory for either side. Are this week's events typical of an aggressive undercurrent that's been in place ever since?
Oh, yes, it is. On both sides, of course, the war is unfinished business. Unity of the peninsula is unfinished business. You've got to remember that Korea, for century after century, even though it lived under the shadow of China and Japan, had been a vibrant, independent nation.
You describe how Stalin and Chairman Mao were involved behind the scenes initially when North Korea invaded South Korea in 1950. It's a simplistic question, but will China have been consulted by North Korea before this week's military assaults?
I doubt it. I would be surprised if China weren't as surprised as the rest of us, even though there were signals, of course, from the North Koreans. They do regard, and you can see their point to an extent, the mass exercise, army exercise involving America and South Korea, as some sort of saber-rattling from the south, for that matter. China, I think, has difficulty in reading Korea. I mean, it's a tea-leaf exercise for them as it is for us. The other thing I did find when I was researching my book in China, the academics I spoke to, and they're still nervous about speaking out freely, said that China itself wanted to prop up the North Korean regime. They didn't want it to collapse. And the basic reason was they didn't want a united Korea, a democratic Korea possibly, and a Korea supported by the United States. They didn't want this quite formidable entity, given the economic clout of South Korea, coming up to their border.
You quote in the book an Australian sniper, Robbie Robertson, who says, when he's out in the cold, fingers cracked, knuckles skinned and infected, knees bruised and aching from slipping on icy slopes, breath freezing on upper lip, chilblains, nose chapped and raw. Presumably this is a good summary of the difficulties the weather imposed on all sides.
Oh yes, indeed. Korea's winter comes out of Siberia. Korea itself is crumpled into valleys and mountains. The Chinese themselves lost thousands and thousands and thousands of men to frostbite.
On the last page, you write about a digger called Vic Day, and shortly after the war, he goes to a Melbourne RSL, and the doorman, an ex-World War II serviceman, won't let him in and says to him, Korea wasn't a war. Was this a war that no one wanted to know about even then?
I have to admit that I shared in some of the amnesia which has led to it being called the Forgotten War, and but when you look at what was happening on the ground, there were probably 3 to 4 million people dead. Only a few years after the use of the doomsday weapon, the atom bomb, you have generals and presidents talking about using it again. In fact, some strategic plans were drawn up for President Eisenhower, which involved the use of the atom bomb. In general, people didn't expect the Cold War, and Korea was the Cold War's hot war, and in fact was regarded by some as a substitute for World War III.
3 years is a long time to fight away from home. What was the final cost to the Australian servicemen during the Korean War?
Australia sent 17,000 men in various stages there. 340 diggers died. That's a huge price to pay for a country.